Hello and welcome to episode 4 of the Dear and Morbi Film Podcast. I'm joined as always by Rowan Morbi.
Hello there, Martin. Hello, everyone.
And I'm Martin Dean. Thanks for joining us yet again. Today, we'll be talking about what we've been watching the last 7 days. We'll not be covering Journey Through Cinema today. We were going to be covering Birth of a Nation, but it's 3 hours long. So we're probably going to do two again on the next show, but cover Birth of a Nation and Liz Vampires, which again is going to be a huge time investment. So we'll give ourselves a bit of time to cover those, and then we're going to be discussing Ron Howard. So we'll jump right in, and Rowan, tell us a little bit about what you've been watching this week.
Okay, so caught up with a couple of Ron Howard films. I'll touch on those later on. So, aside from Mr. Howard, I watched Manhunter, Michael Mann's Manhunter. Remember last week I was talking about Red Dragon. Manhunter was the first film version of the novel Red Dragon, which I say introduced Hannibal Lecter. This is 1986. On Sunday, I watched Manhunter, the director's cut, and then I watched the film again on Wednesday. So I watched it twice this week, but on Wednesday, I watched the original theatrical cut. And the reason I did that is because when I watched the director's cut, rather, I was a bit disappointed with the film to a degree because Michael Mann is one of my favourite directors. He's a very important director to me. I've only seen Manhunter the once, many, 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 many years ago. So this was almost like a first watch, to be quite honest. I watched it on television the first time. I had it on Blu-ray, and I was just a bit, I don't know what I was expecting. I think it's because I watched Red Dragon, the Brett Ratner movie, earlier that day. So I touched on that last week. And that movie follows the novel so very closely, almost, chapter for chapter, if you like. And obviously, you've got Anthony Hopkins reprising his famous role. But in this, Manhunter is very, very different. I think I was just comparing them too much, and the final scenes of Manhunter are nothing like the novel. Whereas, I say, Red Dragon is exactly like the novel. So I revisited it, and then on a second watch, I very much watched it for what it is, rather than trying to compare it to other materials. And I'm glad to say, it's absolutely superb film. I gave it 4.5 stars. It's a it's man a serial killer movie. It's a lot of investigation. But what I really like about the movie is that the lead detective, Will Graham, really get the sense that at any moment he could slip into very, very unbalanced man. And that you don't get in Red Dragon. And Michael Mann, he's all very much about, a world of men. So what makes men tick? What makes a man do what he does? How does one man relate to another? And you get all of that in this film. You've got the use of a lot of pop songs or 80s score in the film, which it does date it slightly, but you've got to take that for what it is. Obviously, he couldn't use songs from today because he's making it back in 1986. You've got to realise it's made in 86. He's going to use songs from that period. And if he made the movie today, he would use songs from this period. You can't fault the film for that. It's really, really very good. Have you seen it, Martin? Manhunter?
I haven't, no. It's not
Yeah,
one
it's
I've seen.
excellent. Yeah, I definitely recommend it. Yeah, it's classic Michael Mann.
I shall add it to the list. I'm pretty sure it's on there. I didn't really get to check out much this week. It's been a really bad film week. I'm gonna let you sort of f finish what you've been watching, and then I'm gonna jump to mine.
Okay.
Listeners who know myself and Rowan will know that Rowan is a big Tom Cruise fan. I watched two Tom Cruise films this week. The two film non-Ron Howard films I watched this week were Tom Cruise films, so I think we can probably get a bit of good discussion out of those two films.
I think so.
So we
Okay.
carry on. What else have you been watching that's worth? But
I watched I watched the 2010 movie MacGruber, which is a film version of the Saturday Night Live character. It's utter nonsense, but I really found it really quite funny in place because it's so stupid, but it knows it is. I liked it a lot. I know on the previous podcast I touched on the fact that modern comedies don't really do it for me. Often don't find them very funny, but MacGruber is a comedy which it's utter bollocks, but it made me laugh constantly for 90 minutes. And what more can you want from that? It's just so stupid, but I really liked it. I really did like it. Follow that up with a couple of Ronnie H. What else did I get around to? I'll save my best for last. So today, actually this morning, I watched 42, which is released in the UK this Friday. I had a DVD copy. Came out in America about 4 months ago. 42 tells the story of Jackie Robinson, the first African American player. Yeah, you know this one? To be signed into the Major Baseball League. Really, really, really good film. I was surprised at how much I enjoyed it. It's emotional, it nearly had me on the verge of tears, to be honest, at some places. But not because the film is overly sentimental, but it's just that, the way we live our lives today, and then you look back 60 years ago and different races had to use different toilets and bathrooms. It's really still very, very sad to see that in a movie. But and then what Robinson stood for, yes, he was the first black player to be signed with the Major Baseball League. But when you realize that this guy, if he ever stepped out of line or he fought back or said something against the people that were trying to press him, he would not only have damaged his career, but also for all the other black players that were going to follow in his footsteps. And so there's so much weight on this guy's shoulders to be strong and to fight through it and to prove that he's obviously as equal as anybody else. It's a really, really uplifting story. Say it's based on a true story, and I knew nothing about the guy or the story or anything like that. I've got no real interest in baseball, but I think that one of the qualities of the film is that you can have an interest or not have an interest in baseball or the story or the characters, and it will still work. You will still feel sympathy and anger and all the other emotions you're supposed to feel. It's really, really very good. Stars Harrison Ford as well, and he gives one of his best performances for I don't know how long, to be honest. If you look at his latest movies, I've not seen all of them. But from what I understand, he's just telephoning in performances now. He just doesn't really care anymore. And he used to be one of my favourite actors, Harrison Ford. I used to go and see anything he was in. But of late, if you go back even a decade or so, you're looking at things like Hollywood Homicide and that sort of nonsense. And he just, taking really, really crap movies. But 42, he's not the main star. The main star is the guy playing Jackie Robinson. So Harrison Ford is very much the co-star. And it suits him really well. He does a really, really good job. So I was pleased to see this movie being both a rousing success and also a bit of a return to form for Mr. Harrison Ford. So I recommend that to viewers, to listeners rather, when the movie opens in the UK. And if anyone is listening in the US, get yourself a copy on DVD or Blu-ray. It's really, really good.
Excellent. That is out Friday the 13th next week. So yeah,
Indeed.
next Friday. Okay, brilliant.
I got two others. I watched indie movie called Kings of the Summer.
Yes, I've got that. A screener copy here. A watch of that. That needs to be tonight's movie.
Right, it's good. It's really quite good. I remember, in fact, again, on another podcast, I spoke about movies that are centered on kids. Isn't really something that does it for me. They tend to be films I stay away from. But this was good. This is, about I don't know how old they are, 13, 14, maybe a bit older. These guys, and I won't, obviously I won't spoil it, but ultimately they they build a house in the woods because they want to get away from their parents. It's, you know, it's a coming of age story. It's really quite funny in places. I liked it a lot. You know, it's well acted. There's a lot of familiar faces from American sitcoms in the film as well, which doesn't hurt at all. For a movie which is focused on kids, and that's not something I enjoy, I found this movie to be thoroughly enjoyable. I think you'll like it, Martin.
Excellent. Well, I say I've got to review that for Flickering Myth next week, so I'll have to ensure that's tonight's film. Go on then, you said you've got one more.
Yeah, the one more is...
Before we get into an argument.
Before we get into an almighty row. So the other one was Ain't Them Body Saints, which opened in the UK on Friday. So this was one of the movies that was high on my must-see list. And simply because I heard that it was shot very much in the style and the sensibility of a early to mid 1970s American New Hollywood. And anyone that knows me knows that that really is my favorite period of cinema. So I avoided all trailers. I avoided all clips, interviews, reviews, everything. All I'd seen is basically the poster and just something I'd heard. And what really annoys me in the fact that I had to do like a 90-mile round trip to go and see this film. It's not showing anywhere near Oxford. We've got like five or six different cinemas in Oxford. And you know Cineworld, how many screens they've got nationwide. It's only showing on six screens. I think four of those are in London, which is crazy. So you've got a film as good as this, and it is good, but it's only showing, you know, in a couple of screens in the UK, which is mental. However, back to the review, and I think that Ain't Nobody Saints is my third favourite film of the year. Giving it 4.5 out of 5, I think it's near perfect for me. It's not for everyone, you know. If you're not into that, I don't say Terrence Malick style. It evokes Terrence Malick at times, especially in the opening 15 minutes. But it's not trying to copy that. It's taking inspiration from the likes of Terrence Malick and Robert Altman, but it's very much its own movie. If you're into that slow storytelling and a lot of voiceover, narration, a lot of natural lighting, there's scenes in the film which are set at nighttime and you can't see anything. You just see like a couple of shadows, but it all looks so genuine and so real. And it really is. It's harking back to a lost style of filmmaking. Films like this are not made anymore, unfortunately. But this is exactly what I love about cinema. So for me, this was just an absolute and utter, a near masterpiece. You know, there are some minor flaws with it, but not enough that I really want to go into. I just think this is superb. And I downloaded the soundtrack as soon as I got home, actually, from iTunes. Just downloaded that whilst I was listening to it whilst I was writing my review. The soundtrack is superb. Really, really good stuff. I cannot praise it enough. Really can't praise it enough. I cannot wait to see it again.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of positivity flying around for that this weekend.
Yeah, it's absolutely superb. It really is.
Excellent. Well, I'll have to... I'm probably not showing anywhere near me without it. Up where I am if it's not showing near you. So, so this week, a bit of a bad film week. Didn't really get around. I did watch my first film this week on Friday, which was Days of Thunder.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Cruise. Seen this film before, but it was on E4. So we put it on. It's a good film. I really liked it. It lost me a little bit. With some of the elements, it's very... There's a particular moment in it which is very, very rapey.
Was that the bit? Which bit's this?
Well, when they're traveling to one of the race shows, they get pulled over and they've got some woman, presumably a prostitute, to dress up as a police officer. Although it plays out like she isn't a prostitute, like she just is a fan of Tom Cruise's character.
Yeah, I think she's just a stripper, yeah.
And they just when they sort of allude when they talk about that moment a bit later on, to Nicole Kidman's character, that Robert Duvall explains it as we got a woman to dress up as a police officer and get it on with him. It's a little bit rapey, the way that comes across.
Interesting. Interesting.
It's very much
Yeah.
a man's film from that sort of era, from Tony Scott.
Oh yeah, it is. Yeah, it's Scott. It's Bruckheimer. It's Don Simpson. It's very much a macho movie. I must say, as you mentioned, I'm a huge Tom Cruise fan, but Days of Thunder is one of my least favorites of his.
Really?
Yeah, what they try to do is make Top Gun 2, but in the world of cars. So you got the Top Gun team back. You had like a $70 million budget. This is supposed to be the big movie of summer '90, and it didn't really succeed
No, it falls flat a bit, doesn't it?
as well as it should. Yeah, there was script problems. I mean, Tom Cruise famously was reading lines off of pieces of paper stuck on his steering wheel as he's going around the track. The script wasn't ready, or it had to be go through a lot of rewrites, and you can see that in the movie. It's not a polished performance. I'm sorry, not a polished movie, considering really where the star was and where the director was at that time. You would expect more. So yeah, it's not one I really revisit, I must say. I
Yeah,
think
the sort of rivalry and then ultimately friendship between Cruise's character and
Cole Trickle. What a name.
it jumps a lot of sort of beats, doesn't it? And they just, they end up friends at the end, sort of no real reason. And that final race, it's not very thrilling. It doesn't really feel like as much at stake whatsoever. It just sort of just plays on your investment as Tom Cruise as a person at that time, really.
Amen to that.
But yeah, the next film I watched, which I watched a few hours ago, which was a first watch, was Oblivion. And God,
The year's best summer blockbuster. Exactly. Carry on.
terrible. Oh, it's bad. Come on, Rowan, it's
It's
bad.
bloody fantastic. It's bloody fantastic. God, you tell me what you didn't like about it. But bear in mind, ladies and gentlemen, this is coming from a man who gave Man of Steel 5 stars. Oh dear. So take
Wait,
what he says with a pinch of
wait, wait,
salt.
wait. On my blog, I gave it 4. On
Oh, did you? Oh,
Flickr
did
and
you?
Myth, because of the split between giving a film a rating for film artistic merit and a rating for movie for entertainment, I always overcompensate. So for a film, I gave it 1 for artistic merit, but for a movie for entertainment, I gave it a 5.
Did you really? You gave it a 5 and a 1?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realise that. Sorry, I thought it was like a 5 and a 5.
No. Come on, behave.
Oh, okay. Ah, fair enough.
Yeah, I
That's
always
cool.
sort of over because of that split, and I shouldn't do. I've started to change that now because it does give a misrepresentation when Gary sort of tweets this is a 5-star review.
Yeah.
So I've stopped doing that. But yeah, I did always sort of overcompensate because of those split ratings. But yeah, I gave that I would have I gave that a 4 initially on reflection, a 3. But yeah, definitely not
Give me a
five.
mark. Give me a mark out of 10.
Out of 10, don't really score
This
out of
man is still
10.
just like.
I don't really score out of 10, so I won't
Love
be.
this guy. I don't do out of 10s, Rowan.
no, I mean, not in that way. Just I don't usually do it, so I've got nothing really to compare to.
Okay.
Probably a 6 or a
What?
7.
Okay. Anyway, back to. So let's get away from those shitty films and get back to
Yes.
Oblivion.
Oh God, it was just. I mean, visually it looks great, but I just felt there wasn't much of a story there to back up. And he, like, you know, Tom Cruise couldn't say this whatsoever. I mean, he's great in it, but he does the best of what he can. But the story wasn't that interesting. I don't think the script supported what really could have been pretty great, given, you know, the visual and.
So tell me, because obviously this was the first watch for you, so obviously you didn't see it in cinemas like you should have done. you watched on Blu-ray, yeah?
I did, yes.
Okay. What were you expecting versus what you got? Was there an expectation there from what maybe you read, or maybe, for example, you know, I mean, I praised it to, you know, from the hilltops. I absolutely loved the film. And I know a lot of people liked it as well. A lot of people, again, didn't like it. But was there something you expected from it that it didn't deliver? Or did you just go into it saying, you know, okay, give me what you got?
Yeah, I just went into it completely open mind. I'll tell you what frame of mind I was in. I paid £15 for it, knowing that a lot of people said they didn't like it. But people such as yourself have said they did like it. So I just paid £15 for it off the bat. Willing to give it a shot and enjoy it for what it was. And I just didn't, unfortunately. I just don't think the story was there. It wasn't that interesting.
I find that really quite interesting, because I thought the story was excellent. And listen, I'll be the first to say that, you know, I don't think it detracts from the film. Everyone goes on about this. I think it doesn't detract from it. But the first to say, though, yeah, it does take inspiration. It does borrow elements from other sci-fi movies. The director admits that. You know, you just got to look at the interviews with Kaczynski when the film came out. He openly says he's a huge fan of the various movies that it references and takes inspiration from. But I don't think that hampered the film's quality just because you see a shot of. I know you haven't said this, but I know some people did. You know, you see a shot of the Statue of Liberty, or you see the red eye of 2001, and there's hints of Independence Day and stuff in there. But, you know, it's almost a homage, I think, to those movies, whilst very much being its own film. I think for me, what I did like is that it really took its time to show this guy and this woman as, you know, pretty much the last people on Earth, or rather what they think has been the last people on Earth. And I love the exploration of how Earth is now, and the use of the drones, all the technology, rather than it being instantaneous, smash, boom, bang, the whole fucking world is exploding, and now look where we are. I very much like that you didn't see any of that, and it was just, you know, getting to know what it's like for this guy doing what he does every day, and then slowly unfolding the layers when, you know, the other girl crash lands on Earth, and all those sort of things are all coming together piece by piece. And that is why I really did enjoy that. Now, I do think that one of the action scenes is probably unneeded towards the end. I don't dislike it, don't get me wrong. I think without it, this film works just as well. But yeah, I think the plot for me was good. I'm not, you know, it wasn't particularly taxing. I don't think, and you could get lost watching it, but the direction it went wasn't what I expected, but I liked where it went.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate what you're saying, and I do admit piecing it together piece by piece was, you know, that's an interesting element. It doesn't just rush to get to where it's going to end up. It really, you know, it takes its time and develops, you know, sort of this Jack as a person. But I don't think they particularly made him that interesting, or the world that interesting. I mean, we've sort of seen that last couple of people on the Earth before, which, you know, a film can borrow from certain things, as long as it's, you know, remakes, we all get sort of up in arms about certain remakes, but if a film remake is good, that's all that matters, really.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, it's not coming from that point of view. It's just it didn't feel that interesting. I guess that's part of Jack's the only sort of character that they try to, you know, his female co-star. She's not written as well. You know, she possibly could have been. She's just sort of a character there that's relaying messages to him. So she's very much involved in the story, but she's very much just a cipher. And we've got all the focus on Tom Cruise's character, and it never dragged me into it. It never got me excited.
Interesting. That's fair enough. It's, you know, I'm sorry, I don't know how you watched or whatever, but. Because remember, I saw it at the IMAX. So you obviously look at the biggest screen in the UK, and it had this frigging amazing sound, like truly amazing sound, and all that just went into the experience. I think I haven't watched it on Blu-ray yet. I've got it, but I haven't watched it.
It does look good, and I thought set design absolutely fantastic. You know, the scene in the football field,
awesome.
Yeah, that just it looks great. The scene in the library, I guess it's a library, underground. That, you know, that looks absolutely brilliant. I mean, there's so much care gone into building that set, making it look good. It's, you know, it's lit perfectly. It's like very eerie, and you know, the flames light in the area, it looks gorgeous. But it's just sort of it felt empty to me.
Yeah.
That the characters weren't that engaged, and didn't seem that much depth to them. And I guess they try to put a lot into it with Jack. You know, is it Jack?
Yeah,
it's Jack. Yeah. You know, he's got his story, his memories of Earth, but there was something about it that just didn't come across as. I guess it's a very bad term to use, but real just didn't feel. There was no connection that I was making with the world or the characters that were on the screen.
Yeah, you know, it sounds like to me you didn't absolutely hate it. I thought the way you were going on, you thought it was awful.
No, I wouldn't say it was awful. No, just less than average, really. I mean, it's definitely didn't hate it. I could put it on again and. You know, I was tweeting earlier, you know, better things to spend £15 on than Oblivion. But that, you know, it's just hyperbole for Twitter, really. But yeah, I mean, I could put it on again and have it in the background and look at it, you know. But definitely didn't hate it, but I just didn't think it was particularly very good.
That's a disappointment, because I was enjoying doing this podcast, but now... it's all over. No, that's fair enough. I say, you know,
like, I don't think they sort of built the stakes very well either, until the sort of the end.
What?
Like it's not until much later on that we feel what the characters are actually fighting for. By that point, I didn't really care.
Right. I think for me, that when all that comes along, I was so invested in what's happened that, you know, when they do start talking about, you know, what the plan is and what they need to do, I was all for it. I was absolutely there. That's interesting. So, you know, for me, it's the only big budget film which at the moment will be in my top 10 of the year.
Really? Sure.
Yeah. Well, I get, you know, on my blog, I get 4.5 out of 5. I love this movie. I absolutely love this movie a hell of a lot. And, you know, when I look at all the other films from summer 2013, all the other big budget stuff, in my opinion, nothing even came close to it. Nowhere near as close. But you know, I say I appreciate that a lot of people didn't buy into it. But you've seen it, so at least you can you know, have your opinion.
Yeah. Okay. Well. I think that's it for what we've been watching then. So, we shall move on.
This is an incredible battle between these two great drivers.
Next time I'll have you.
No chance.
You're just the party guy. That's why everybody likes you.
Yes, I know, I'm terrible.
No, you're not terrible. You're just who you are at this point in your life.
To be a champion, it takes more than just being quick.
You have to really believe it.
I've been waiting for this my whole life.
I can beat this guy, trust me.
He's consistent, dependable.
Will he put his life on the line the day that really matters?
So that was a clip from the trailer for Rush, from director Ron Howard, who is the prime topic for this week's podcast. And I'm going to pass it over from here to Rowan to give us an introduction to him.
Okay, so, yeah, Ron Howard, Oscar-winning director, former star of hit show Happy Days. We'll talk about Ron Howard this week because, as Martin just mentioned, his latest movie, Rush, is being released in the UK and I think actually worldwide. Just decided on Ron Howard because he's a director who has made a lot of films, but he doesn't really stick to the same tried and tested formula compared to, say, last week's topic, Michael Bay. You look at Bay and he very much sticks to what he knows and what he knows will make money, whereas a movie and a filmmaker like Ron Howard, he is very much into exploring different genres, different time periods. And we thought it'd be a good idea to really have a look at some of his films as a whole, and then maybe drill down and discuss some that we really like, and perhaps others that we didn't think necessarily hit the mark. What I will say, though, is about Ron Howard is that he is a very, I should say, very, very honest, very earnest director. He's not into spectacle over story. He's very much into putting story first, even though he does make some very big films. He's made some films based on some best-selling novels. He's made films based on true stories, historical events. He's made movies that appeal to adults, that appeal to children, and appeal to families. He's a very diverse director, and I think he is one of the I wouldn't say underrated, because his films do take a lot of money, but I think in movie blog world he isn't really talked about a lot, because I guess he's not making superhero films or films about things blowing up for 90 minutes. He's a lot more than that, as his latest film, Rush, will testify. So what me and Martin have done, and what we're going to try and do for all of our main topics moving forward, is come up with our top five list. So today will be our top five Ron Howard movies, mine and Martin's separately. And then maybe touch on one or two, if there are any, that didn't really do it for us. And everything in between, really. So Martin, do you want to go ahead and tell me maybe either start with your top five or what your thoughts and feelings are on Ron Howard in general?
There's a lot of films of Ron Howard's which I like. We've touched on Apollo 13 the past couple of weeks, so
yes,
we probably won't discuss that too much, although I guess it's might possibly in both our top fives. He's made a couple of average films, and he's made a couple of sort of strange for the masses kind of blockbusters. The Da Vinci, the Dan Brown.
Yeah, the Da Vinci Code and the sequel. Yes.
Yeah, Angels and Demons. Yeah, which those sort of films. I like the Da Vinci Code. The Angels and Demons It's nonsense, really. But it's actually, I think he directs that in such a way, the sort of chase through Rome when they're tracking this serial killer down. That's directed really well. And you see, as we've alluded to, sort of Apollo 13, he's able to build tension and suspense very well. Obviously, with Apollo 13, he had just the perfect ingredients there. The story was there already. This this real life event, which you know, for people to go through. It's, you know, it's on, not quite on the level of, you know, the Cuban Missile Crisis when the world was on the verge of, you know, killing ourselves. But it's, you know, it's up there as one of the most tenseful moments that humanity's experienced, especially when, you know, with media around. But he's able to convey all of that so well with the use of his camera, which you say, you know, Angel and Demons is a film you can very much, you know, it's a pretty much a throwaway film, really. You know, the plot story, it's pretty ridiculous. But there was there's a lot of great moments in that, which comes from his direction.
Yeah, I watched I saw the cinema. I watched it again on Friday as part of this Von Howard marathon. Yeah, you know, it's just a good, I don't really like this term, but I'm going to say it anyway, popcorn movie. And when people say popcorn movie, they usually refer to stuff where you you know, you pay your money and you just want to be entertained. You don't necessarily want to, you have to think stuff through, which, you know, isn't really a phrase I like to use. But with this, it is very much that. It is, as you say, it's an absolute load of nonsense, but it is enjoyable, I guess, because the chase is very much grounded in some sort of fact. You know, the stuff that Dan Brown writes about in his novels is all based on some sort of fact, and then he takes very much, he takes a lot of artistic license to then turn it into a work of fiction. But with the Da Vinci, Angels and Demons, yeah, you've got this chase movie through Rome. You look at all the different historical monuments and artifacts, and whether they build that all into the story, it's really quite good. I think, you know, Tom Hanks is pretty much on autopilot, but he's not doing his best work there. But he's doing enough. He's got enough of a stage presence to make this character Robert Langdon, you know, pop off the screen. He's obviously, he trusts Ron Howard that he will deliver the action sequences in a way which, you know, they make sense, they're exciting. And, you know, we say these things like it's nothing, but if you look at the amount of movies that come out today that can't deliver the basics when it comes to a good chase or an action sequence, Ron Howard, he's a guy that can do that.
I mean, yeah, like, you take the end of Angels and Demons. I mean, look at the way we're talking about Angels and Demons, which is probably nowhere near top fives. You know, spoilers, you know, the end of that where Ewan McGregor's character is getting the antimatter out of the Vatican and up in the helicopter. I mean, that is pure nonsense.
Yeah,
but it's directed very well that you are sort of engaged in what's definitely going to happen. And that's all down to him, because on a story level, it is nonsense. But he's able to at least bring you into that story, and not maybe care, but you want to know what's going to happen. And he's making you sort of feel something towards it, which, exactly, with that material, cannot be understated, really.
Yeah, I completely agree. And also, I watched some of the, because I do have it on Blu-ray, and I watched some of the special features, and it's quite incredible watching that scene. But, you know, none of that scene was shot in Vatican City. That was all shot in Hollywood somewhere. So all that stuff it's either CGI, it's models, it is matte paintings. It's a combination of stuff. But you look at it, you think, yeah, that's apart from the CGI helicopter, that could be shot in the middle of Vatican City. And, you know, that's the sort of care and attention that he gives to his films, that you are convinced that they actually shot this on location when they didn't. It's just little touches like that, the levels of detail he will go to make a film work. Yeah, really quite good. I say, and that's by no means his best film, but it's still one you can talk about and say, yeah, it's good fun, if nothing else.
Yeah, absolutely. I watched two films just the two films this week and this weekend to prepare for this, and it's films that I remember watching when I was much younger, so they weren't first watches. And I must admit, there's three or four of his which I haven't seen, which I was hoping to get around to, but just didn't have the chance. But I watched Backdraft and Cocoon.
Yes.
And you say he's a very honest, he's a very earnest director. And before Backdraft, there was a little bit of an introduction to him, from him, sorry, on the film.
Okay.
You know, he was talking about this. It was a new release, and he was talking about some of the interviews, but he was talking about the film and how they put it together. And you know, I've been on the the LA Universal Studios. I went on the Backdraft.
Yeah, I did as well.
Ride.
Yeah.
You know, the way they shoot that film, you know, with real fire is incredible. I mean, the special effects, which, you know, and in this introduction, he says that, I mean, Backdraft came out in 1991. And he, you know, he's talking about how digital effects, you know, they were just coming around then. And so they used them, they shot some stuff, with, you know, they used digital effects to do a test, because that's how they were going to do things. It took her, you know, a few weeks, a month or whatever. The test footage come back with these digital effects, the fire, 6 weeks before filming was due to begin, and it looked atrocious. I mean, obviously, Man of Steel this year, you know, the fire in that looked ridiculous as well.
Terrible,
fire,
yeah.
Yeah, fire is like a very hard thing to get right, you know, with visual effects, because it's got such a... And what the film tried to do, you know, when did this, is him making it a character, giving it to life of its own. That's very much what Look Fire is, isn't it? It's very, I mean, you can sit and stare at fire for hours. You know, if you've got a fireplace, you could just sit and stare at it, or you go camping, you can sit and stare at fire for hours. So yeah, if you're using digital effects for that, they're going to be, they've got to be spot on, otherwise you're going to notice and it's going to look bad. So yeah, 6 weeks before, they had to scrap doing it digitally, and you know, he went to his special effects guy and said, look, we need to do this properly. And then what we came up with, you know, just absolutely fantastic. And you know, the film is so much better for it, for going with the practical effects route, and how they, you know, controlled the fire that way. Incredible. But the film itself is a bit it's very... How do I say this without sort of upsetting anyone? But there's a line at the end which I just rolled my eyes at, when Kurt Russell looks at his brother, who's William Baldwin, who's, you know, fighting the fire, and he's like, "Look at him, that's my goddamn brother," and it's ridiculous. No one talks like that, and that's very much like Backdraft. I mean, some of the dialogue's just corny as hell. It's terrible.
Yeah, I remember Backdraft, and I haven't seen it for ages, actually, but I remember it being visually fantastic, and like the action, one of the action scenes, you know, the scenes with the firefighters putting out the fires are really, really good. But at the centre of it, there's this, if I remember correctly, there's like a love triangle or something, and it's
the story of two brothers, Kurt Russell and William Baldwin. And William Baldwin, the first scene, he's the youngest, and he sees he goes out with his dad to a fire, and he sees his dad get the building blows up, that his dad's, you know, he's rescuing these people, and then there's a backdraft and the place blows up, so he sees his dad die. Kurt Russell then goes on to become, you know, a great firefighter. William Baldwin is a bit of a screw up; he can't stick in anything for too long. Gibbs, he's dropped out once from fire training already, goes back to it a couple of years later and graduates, and then ends up working with his brother. And the story is the main story is, you know, this relationship between the two brothers, and it's very it's broken, really. But you know, the backstory, the sort of second story, is there's an arsonist going around, and that's related to you know, there's a bigger things afoot. So it's very you know, firefighters are so great, man. Which, you know, respect to firefighters for risking their lives, but it's very over the sort of over the top, rather than just telling the stories of these two guys. It's, you know, it's a bit like Black Hawk Down in the respect that it's, you know, so over the top, glamorizing these people that it sort of loses its effect in portraying these people well. But yeah, I mean, it's fairly enjoyable, but you know, practical effects great. You get the great performance out of Kurt Russell, who's great in it. And Robert De Niro's in it as well.
Did you watch it on DVD or Blu-ray, out of interest?
The introduction to the film mentions DVD, but I'm pretty sure it says Blu-ray on it.
Oh. Interesting.
They probably just transferred it over, the introduction over from the DVD to the Blu-ray. But yeah, it looked good, but again, very sort of over the top, schmaltzy. Oh, and these people are so great. Sort of let it down a little bit in just telling a good story about firefighters. The other film I watched this weekend of his was Cocoon. Hadn't seen this since I was a kid. It pretty much freaked me out, I remember back then. Obviously, it's the story of elderly retired people in Florida who discovered these, three of the old men are sneaking out of the home and into someone else's home and using their pool, and these mysterious cocoons at the bottom of the pool, and they find that they're feeling better and younger, and one guy's cancer goes into remission. And he was pretty much looking a goner before that. And it's a really sort of sweet story about, you know, old age and recapturing youth, really. And so the ending gets a little bit... There's one character who wants no part in this. It's aliens, obviously, that have come to Earth, and the cocoons are inside the cocoons are aliens, and you know they are able to, they've got these regeneration abilities, and it comes off on the humans. And at the end, most of them take off with the aliens to live a life for basically eternity. Which I guess I didn't really like. Have you seen Cocoon?
Yeah, but not for many, many years. I was going to watch it this week, actually, but I never got around to it.
Yeah, I didn't really like the ending. There's one character who doesn't want any part in using this pool. Him and his wife, who's got Alzheimer's, her memory's, really gone. But he wants no part in it. He sort of respects the cycle of nature and life and death. And I guess the ending, they all take off for the aliens and they live, to live for eternity and forever. But I guess I didn't like that, because who wants to live forever? And that's not looking at it personally, I felt that the film would have probably been stronger if, the acceptance of life as it is, and the inevitable, really.
Mm-hmm.
So in that respect, it's a bit, oh yes, wouldn't it be great if people could live forever, and rather than just looking at life as how it is and accepting life, that life will come to an end, and dealing with that. But it is a sort of very upbeat film, and living life to its fullest, really.
Yeah, I remember it being quite a sweet film, a good cast.
Yeah, it has got a good cast, yeah.
There's also a sequel, which wasn't Ron Howard, was it? It was called Cocoon The Return, I think.
Yes, there was, yeah. That? No, I've not seen that, no.
Yeah, I saw it once, but I don't remember it whatsoever.
Straight to DVD, was it?
Yeah, I think it was. I think it might have been theatrical, but obviously Ron Howard saw the sense to stay away, so I probably don't think I'll be watching Cocoon The Return anytime soon. I watched of his, I watched Willow for the first time in years. I think probably the first time in about two decades. Now, Willow was a film that I never had on VHS. I never had it on DVD. I never even had it recorded off the television. And looking back at it, I now know why. It's a film that I think a lot of people look back on lovingly, because yeah, it does have the adventure, and it's got, you know, young Val Kilmer, and it's got some good, well, no, she's got some terrible CGI, to be honest, towards the end. I'm not the sort of person that knocks stuff for being old and now looking dated, not at all, but there's some CGI before Willow that really holds up, but the stuff in Willow simply doesn't. It's really terrible towards the end. It's about taking this baby back to its village or something. I don't know. It didn't lose me, but it lost my interest quite early on, unfortunately. I had always remembered it as being more of a fun adventure than what it was. So I'll never watch Willow again for long as I live.
That's one I haven't seen, so I think I'll give that a miss.
Yeah, I can't recommend. I say it's got a fan base, but it's not one that I can recommend personally. And the rest of the ones, the other one is Rush, which I'll probably get to when we do our top five. So I don't know if there's anything else you wanted to add to the Ron Howard conversation. You want to jump into our top five now?
We'll discuss those films, yeah. Mine are in no particular order. I've got Frost Nixon on there. Uh-huh. Very timely with Frost passing recently. I thought that was a great film.
Yes, it's my number two, Frost Nixon, on his list. I think that, as you say, it's beyond great. When you think that the source material is quite simply two guys talking. That's what the movie is. It's two guys talking, and out of that he creates genuine tension towards the end. It is a directing masterclass, that movie.
Yeah, he really builds the stakes of exposing Nixon.
Yeah.
And you say those interviews, you know, they really do play out like a complete joke from Frost's side, just not taking it seriously, and then obviously he begins to realise that he needs to. And yeah, those final few interview scenes are absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, and it's also about, and this, it's similar to Rush actually in a way, that these two guys, they're on opposite sides of this, you know, this particular interview, but they have a respect for each other, even though they're technically rivals. There's still a respect there. You know, David Frost, he doesn't just go in like a bull in a china shop and try and destroy Nixon in the first interview. They really do want to get the truth and the full story out. And, you know, and Nixon, by the end of it, he's in a position where he wants to tell the truth. He wants to say his piece. You know, and I think the levels of respect they must have had for each other to get that interview to, you know, the way it came out is enormous.
Have you ever watched the actual interview?
I have. Yeah.
You have. Mm. Yeah, I did a long time ago, yeah. And I think he Howard definitely gets the spirit of that across well.
Mm.
And they get, you know, great performances from Frank Langella and Michael Sheen.
Mm-hmm.
Um,
really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
I think we've already touched on this, but you know, it's like Howard is a man that gets good performances. He really does.
Yeah, he definitely does. As we'll see from some of the other films we're going to touch on. But yeah, definitely gets a lot out of his actors here, and you know, it's a well constructed film.
He's Oscar nominated for that as well. I think it's worth noting.
Yeah.
Deservedly so.
Yeah, I've got that. I've got that in there. There's a couple of films of his that I just haven't seen. So I've got a pretty solid top three. I'm trying to remember Ransom, because I remember Ransom as being, quite a good film.
It's my number four. I think Ransom is absolutely superb.
Yeah, I think I'd probably put that in there as well. Yeah, I think I'd probably. But then that's a pretty terrifying film, really.
Yeah,
you get that. You know, the fear, the parent fear, and obviously, you know, Dan Mel Gibson as well for his performance. But yeah, there's a very ominous feel to that film, which he gets across.
Yeah, I say it's good because it's an adult blockbuster. You know, this is the movie that took $135 million in the US. You know, you've got a massive star like Mel Gibson, but it's not some PG-13 rated movie. This is a hard R movie. You know, you see kids locked in basements, tied to beds. You see a lot of people get shot. There's a lot of bad language. There's fighting. There's shouting. There's all sorts of stuff going on in this movie. It's very adult, but very, very entertaining. And if you think, you know, Ron Howard, here's a guy who's directed Splash and Willow and Parenthood, movies like that. And he comes out, you know, his movie before this was Apollo 13. You know, he follows that up with Ransom. You know, and it's a movie I've watched loads of times. I love this film. I think it's really well directed. I love the twist. You know, I think anyone who's not seen Ransom, then A, what are you doing with your life? And B, you know, maybe skip over the next couple of minutes. But the twist at the end, where the cop takes it on himself to kill his co-conspirators and try and collect the ransom for himself, I didn't see that coming at all. Did not see that coming at all. It's a fantastic twist. And even though I've seen the film loads and loads of times, it doesn't surprise me anymore. But I still love knowing that it's going to happen. And then, you know, watching Mel Gibson find out about it. I think it's a really good film and an underrated film, especially now, you know, the way Gibson's career has gone and his popularity has obviously dwindled. I guess it's a film that people probably don't revisit or don't, you know, want to go back and have a look at, which is a real shame because there's a lot of good stuff going on in Ransom. I highly recommend it.
You know, Gary Sinise.
Awesome.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant in this film. Yeah, definitely underrated. And as you say, probably not one people really go back to because of, you know, Gibson's problems. But yeah, very solid film, very raw.
Yeah.
And then of course, a couple of years later, definitely not in my list, but, you know, you're saying he's able to cover a lot of ground. He's got a lot of range for a director. I mean, a couple of years after Ransom, he goes to How the Grinch Stole Christmas. Yeah, that's a great Christmas film.
You know what? I haven't seen it.
You never seen How the Grinch Stole Christmas?
No, never seen it.
Bro, and what are you doing?
I know. And this is back in the day where, you know, Jim Carrey was still massive. And, you know, at that time, I was a big Jim Carrey fan, big Ron Howard fan. But I never got around to watching that film.
You'll have to make it your Christmas film this year.
I will do. I'm going to write a note to myself now.
I'll schedule a tweet for December 23rd.
Automatic tweet goes out.
Yes. well, after How the Grinch Stole Christmas, he made A Beautiful Mind, which is in my list.
Okay.
I only saw that for the first time this year.
As did I.
Saw it a few months ago, and I loved it. I thought it was very entertaining. I was very invested in the story, in Jarrell's, Russell Crowe, I forgot his name. I was very invested in what was going on with Russell Crowe's character. Spoilers, I guess, for this film if you've not seen it, when it's all revealed that it's in his mind, he's having these delusions. I thought that was very excellently portrayed by Howard again. The sort of paranoia. There's that great chase scene when he's dropping the envelopes off at the house and he's beginning to get very paranoid. And there's that big chase that he has back to his house. And that's, that again is crafted so well. You feel that paranoia, you feel that tension that Russell Crowe's character is feeling. Very effective film, very, very compelling film.
Yeah, I watched it myself for the first time this year as well. It's always a movie I wanted to get round to seeing. I just, sometimes you just don't, like How the Grinch Stole Christmas. but yeah, I liked it. I wasn't blown away by it, I must say, considering it was a Best Picture winner and he won Best Director. Now, that might be me thinking that I was going to get something which would blow me away or would be a real game changer in terms of the Ron Howard filmography. I think I'll probably give it a 3.5 out of 5. It's a really good film. I think it's really well directed, really well acted. I just guess for me the story didn't grip me, or it didn't move me, or whatever that needed to do for me to put it on the next level of appreciation. But yeah, it's, I don't think it's his best movie, certainly not, but it's certainly good. And you say it's very, very well acted. I mean, Russell Crowe is superb in that.
Yeah, he's absolutely brilliant. Mm. I was really invested in the story. There's some really gut-wrenching sort of moments in there, especially what happens with his child. He's responsible for, and I think there's a great sort of look to it as well, because being set during that time period and the way that it's shot, lit, I think it looks great. It sets that sort of, there is that feeling of it's dark and it's what's the word that I'm searching for? It's very dark. It's very gloomy, which just sort of dragged me into it more.
I preferred Cinderella Man.
Cinderella Man, yeah.
Personally,
yes.
Did you see that?
I've seen that, but not for a very long time.
Yeah, so I only watched it the once, so I do remember really liking Cinderella Man. In fact, it's one I wanted to watch this week. But again, never got round to it, unfortunately. I got it on DVD. I know exactly where it is on my shelf. So it's one I will be watching pretty soon. I know that much. I'm also currently watching a Blu-ray copy of Ransom on eBay. I've got it on DVD. But I have never got the Blu-ray, and I'm very tempted to upgrade, actually, having given it such a great review just then. But yeah, Cinderella Man is I remember that being a very good film. Didn't get the audience that A Beautiful Mind got, which I think everyone assumed it would, because it's Howard and Crowe back together again in another rousing and uplifting true story. So the top five then. So for me, we talked about Frost Nixon, we talked about Ransom. The Missing is in my top five. Did you ever see that one?
The Missing? No, I haven't.
Yeah, Kate Blanchett and Tommy Lee Jones. Quality film. Just pure quality. It's a Western. I've only seen it once, so I apologise if I get the plot wrong, despite, you know, as I really liking the movie. Kate Blanchett's child or children get stolen, kidnapped rather, and she has to do this to help Tony Jones to get them back. But I remember the movie being quite violent towards the end. It's quite an adult Western. Like Ransom is an adult thriller. It's a very good movie. It's violent. It is unflinching. It's not your typical, you know, shoot 'em up sort of Western. It's not like a Young Guns or anything like that. It's very much geared for a mature audience, but it was really, really very, very good. Again, it's another one I wanted to revisit this week, but I didn't get around to doing it. So, and I know exactly where that one is on my shelf. So it's not like I don't know where these films are. It's just having the time to get back to them. Yeah, but The Missing is one I highly recommend, especially if you like Westerns and you like, you know, ones which are aimed at an adult audience. And then the other movie on my list, well, my number one film is, I think, same as yours, Apollo 13.
Yeah, that's a masterpiece. It's definitely absolutely his. You know, we both talked about that in the past couple of weeks, but yeah, truly fantastic film.
Absolutely perfect.
I like the Da Vinci Code.
Interesting. I think that's his worst.
Yeah?
Yeah. I've only seen it the once.
It didn't make my top five, but yeah, I quite like the Da Vinci Code. It's like you say though, where it's that sort of popcorn cinema that I can, you know, can put on and just have a good time with and just enjoy it, not really think about it too much. Just you know, I like Tom Cruise in it. Tom Hanks in it. Tom Cruise in the brain this weekend. yeah, just like I say, bit of popcorn cinema, something to enjoy. But yeah, I'd probably go for Cinderella Man, Ransom, Frost Nixon, A Beautiful Mind, and Apollo 13 would probably be my five.
Interesting. So my five in order of best. Well, I think
mine weren't in order there, but
I went Apollo 13, Frost Nixon. Number three is Rush, which I'll touch on in a sec. Four, Ransom, and five, The Missing. So I saw Rush this week at a preview screening. It's really, really, really good film. I gave it 4 out of 5 in my review. It's just solid filmmaking from beginning to end. It's sort of film you really do appreciate, because it doesn't matter. Like the movie I talked about earlier, 42. You know, this is based on sport. So here it's Formula One. You know, they're all real characters, all real people. But the two leads are, you know, were Formula One drivers back in the mid-70s. But you don't need to be a fan of Formula One or these two particular drivers to appreciate the movie. It whether you are or not, you will be thrilled, you will be entertained. The fact that it is a true story, some of the stuff that happens in it, you know, if you didn't know it was a true story, you might say that's bullshit. There's no way that could happen. But the fact that it did makes the movie even better, because you're like, wow, you know, this guy. I'm not going to spoil it, because I'm so glad that I didn't watch any of the trailers, because they give bits away, even though it's based, you know, on a real story. And these are stuff which, you know, is in the news or can be in the news or whatever. I didn't know anything about it. But the things that happen in it are quite, really quite outstanding. You think that people went through only to come back, you know, driven by their determination to be the best, to be number one, to beat their rivals, all those sorts of things. It comes home very, very, very strongly in Rush. And that's how I paired it with Frost Nixon, because again, you've got two guys battling against each other to be the best, with both a lot at stake, but both need each other to be number one, really. So it's a superb film, and it's good to see Chris Hemsworth actually giving a good performance. You know, because he's in the next Michael Mann film. They're currently shooting that film called Cyber, and you know, I couldn't be looking forward to that anymore. But when I found out it was Chris Hemsworth, I thought, oh God, you know, the guy who played Thor is now in a Michael Mann film. I've got to go and see a Chris Hemsworth film. Oh shit! but on the basis of this movie, on the basis of Rush, you know, I think, you know, he's much more than just Thor, and that's all I've seen him in before. So I'm not anti Chris Hemsworth at all.
I can't picture him as anything else other than the guy off Home and Away.
never watched it.
Never watched Home and Away? You've never lived, Rowan.
I don't think I watched it with Chris Hemsworth in anyway.
We discussed last week, I was going to go and see Rush, but the week just really got away from me, so I missed that. So I'll have to see it when it comes out, which is actually next week, isn't it, I believe?
Friday.
So I'll have to go and see it then. I'll probably make that my Friday film, actually. So yeah, it sounds like a lot of the sort of elements that we've been talking about of taking true stories and being effectively able to still build that suspense, that tension, yes, and getting you invested in the story despite probably knowing what happened, you know, just being a very effective filmmaker at bringing that story to life. I guess that's all the sort of best of his best qualities really on show, are they?
Absolutely, Martin. That's completely what it is. Yeah, it's. I think in the hands of another director, then it would have been all spectacle first and maybe story second. I think you would have seen countless shots of the tires going round and the people in the crowd and all that sort of stuff. All the stuff that's really, you know, immaterial. But in this, and it is exciting. You know, the racing scenes are handled really quite well, really very well. But it all adds to the character development which has been established. You know, without that, doesn't matter how nice the racing shots look, then you just don't care. And in fact, it's ironic you mentioned Days of Thunder earlier, because it's basically the opposite of Days of Thunder. Whereas Days of Thunder, you don't really build up too much in investment in the characters, and the racing shots do look good in that movie, but ultimately you don't really care. Whereas in this movie, yeah, it's a complete opposite. You really do, you really are rather invested in James Hunt and Niki Lauda, and what they do then on the racetrack becomes important to the audience, and it's all thanks to, you know, a director like Ron Howard to establish that character in the first place.
Yeah, because if we sort of look at him as a, because I think we've sort of touched on all. Both of our top five films now, yeah?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
But if we look at him, his work overall, you take films like the Dan Brown, you know, Da Vinci Code, Angel and Demons, look at Cocoon, and then, you know, those, you know, obviously not based on true stories, very sort of enjoyable films, but very much sort of average kind of fare. But then you look at the true story films that he's tackled, and he really is able to get just something completely different out of them that he brings to, I mean, and obviously I know that these sort of real life stories, you know, the subject matter is so much more interesting, but he's able to just get something out of them films which isn't always there with the films that are not based on true stories. It's like his heart, I don't want to say his heart's not in, you know, the Dan Brown books, but it's like he's really got a passion for bringing these true stories to life on screen.
Yeah, I see that.
And like you see a different side to him.
That's for certain. You know, I'm a bit, I wouldn't say disappointed, but you know, his next movie is Inferno, which is another Dan Brown movie. So he's paired up again with Tom Hanks, same character, same director. I don't know anything about the story, but if it's anything like Da Vinci Code and Angel and Demons, then it's going to be at best enjoyable nonsense. But that's fair enough, because you know he's made movies like Frost Nixon, he's made Rush, he's done, you know, Cinderella Man, The Missing, things like that. So I guess he's earned a big budget, hopefully box office success, bit of nonsense, which is fair enough.
As we say, there's scenes in those movies which are, you know, really very well directed.
Exactly.
And like going back to Cocoon, the end of that film is, spoilers, the old people, there's about 30 of them, get on this boat and they're trying to get off the dock when the police are chasing them. And all they're doing is, you know, pushing away from this dock. That's all it is, and them getting out further out to sea. Whilst that isn't necessarily that exciting, the story hasn't really built up, you know, that much. The direction is good. It is a bit tense, them getting away from that dock. He's really got a good quality for that.
Yeah. It's all the hallmarks of a good director. If you can get tension out of old people getting on a boat, or if you can get genuine tension out of, say, an ex-president and a cocky interviewer doing an interview, if you can get tension out of just two Formula One drivers, not even on the track, just the way they are in interviews, or the way they are just talking to each other, if you can get tension out of all these things, then it's clear that you've got a very talented filmmaker on your hand here, and someone who understands and appreciates the source material and isn't just picking stuff for a paycheck. You know, he's not just picking stuff because he knows it's going to make him an absolute fortune because on the back of box office receipts. And sure, you know, the Da Vinci Code, which is now a trilogy, that will make a huge box office return. But with that, you hope he then does something more character-driven, like another Rush or another, you know, Cinderella Man, for example. So that wraps it up for the Ron Howard discussion. A couple of good movies there, couple of stinkers, but all round, I think Ron Howard is a director which we like a lot. So next week, Martin, what we got coming up? I don't think we actually decided yet. Probably have a flick for the book, I think, aren't we?
Yes. We'll be jumping back into the Journey Through Cinema next week. We'll have a look through the book, decide. We possibly might jump through, take a look at a Western and a sci-fi that came after A Trip to the Moon and The Great Train Robbery, sort of see how those genres evolved. Or maybe just cover something different. We'll tweet about what we're going to be watching in case you just want to have a watch and be able to join in discussion when we do it. So the main topic we're going to be looking at is, as Rowan suggested, Die Hard's Honor. So films that took inspiration from Die Hard to varying degrees of success. We'll be looking at the likes of Speed, Olympus Has Fallen, and this is obviously for the release of White House Down, which is being referred to as Die Hard in the White House. So that will be the topic for next week's show, which will be coming a little bit later than usual because Rowan's off on holiday. Lucky him, the bastard. Thank you for listening in, and we shall catch you next time.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Bye-bye.